Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy, Son. Life lessons on your journey to your purpose. As we have with all the past weeks, this week we have another special guest with us, a young lady who has captured the imagination of many, a young lady who has done remarkable things in a short span of time. I won't get into much of the details around what her accomplishments are because I want for her to bring them out in the audience. But ladies and gentlemen, with me today, this week I should say, is none other than Miss Danielle Williams, former world champion at 110 meter hurdles and a graduate of the prestigious Johnson C. Smith University. She's here with us today because she has a story to share and to inspire, as we always try to do on this show, young people and young professionals and folks that are wondering, how do elite athletes, how do just regular folks outside of the eyes of the media and everything else, how do they go through? How do they get to where they are? So she's with us today, and we're in for another treat as she will share with us her life story and her journey to where she is thus far in professional athletics. And ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, I welcome to the podcast this week, Ms. Danielle Williams. Ms. Williams, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Mr. Hexer. I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. And, you know, I've watched you over the years. I've had the opportunity to have a front row seat to watch you and your sister and others come through Johnson C. Smith and make it all the way through to becoming elite athletes and in your case, a world champion. So what we would want to do today, and as I've shared with all my guests, is that I do just a little bit of talking. And you do most of the talking, and as you're speaking, I will interject questions. But the goal of all of this podcast and why we have such stellar guests on the podcast is for you to share your story as a way to inspire, show us, you know, share your beginnings and how you kind of made it up the ladder, so to speak, so that young people and young professionals can hear and also see that in order to get to where you need to go, it might not be a straight path, but there are things that you will have to encounter and overcome. So with that, I'm going to stop talking and just say, ask you the first opening question. You know, what was growing up like? And tell us a little bit about your background and your early years and what set you on this path to where you are today?
You know, I ask myself that quite a lot because I really don't know how I ended up on this path. But growing up, it was pretty typical. I consider myself to be in middle class. You know, I had quite a large family. I mean, I'm one of five siblings. I have four sisters and a brother. I'm close to the second to last one. And so growing up, I was probably always following my older siblings. Whatever they did, they got into, I got into as well. And so, yeah, my journey started in prep school. I went to prep school. All my siblings went to prep school. So my parents, though we weren't rich, they made sure that they tried to give us the best that we education that we could possibly get. And so for them, they felt like prep school was the best education. And so we all went to prep school. And in prep school, I think that's where I got introduced to track and field, mainly because my siblings did it. And it wasn't necessarily that we were the fastest. It was just really something to do after school, extracurricular activities. And being from Jamaica, our track and field is one of, if not the most popular activity sport there. And so we all got involved in track and field. And I kind of just took a liking to it, stuck with it. It was actually a way to get out of the house on the weekends. And the track meets were track meets were on Saturdays, and so it was a way for us to leave the house and just go out and get something done instead of just being in the house all the time. And so I was not necessarily great at it, but I liked it because we could interact with others and have fun doing it. Just the thrill of just going out there and running as fast as you can. So this day is still what drives me in the sport. And yeah, that was pretty much my upbringing in the sport of track and field and growing up.
So what was family like with, you have five siblings, and what was the home like in terms of a mom, dad, and discipline, and did that filter over into your love for the sport and your dedication to the sport? What was the family like?
I think it's pretty dynamic, I guess I would say. My mom would probably be the disciplinarian, and my father was the more chill, laid back one. He would say that he's where we got our athletic side from because he did track and field as well, and he played cricket. So I've never seen my mother running, so I don't know if she can run. But my father says that he's the one that we got our athletic side from, and every one of us played sport, did sport at some point in time. I think everybody did track and field. My brother branched off into basketball, and he did that all the way up to college. But outside of us, myself and my older sister, we were the only ones who kind of really took it serious. So sport for us was just really something to pass the time.
So you when you were in prep school, did you participate in prep champs at the stadium in prep school?
I have vague memories of participating in prep champs, but I can't remember exactly. But I know I was at the stadium, but I don't know if I ran or I just went as a also went. I'm not sure.
You were on the team, but maybe not on the track.
Yeah, right.
Okay, all right. So after prep school, where did you go to prep school?
Kingsgate Prep School.
Oh,
It's
Kingsgate, okay.
in Jamaica, in Hope, off Hope Road.
Off Hope Road,
Yeah.
that's correct. So after
Near
prep school,
Babylon.
right. After prep school, what happens after prep school?
After prep school, I went to Queens School for Girls, all girls high school. And there, it was more of the same. I mean, I was a walk-on. I wasn't like one of the highly recruited athletes, obviously, out of prep school, but I went on a track team. And again, it was just, I had to do sports. And so track and field was what I knew. So I went and joined the track team. And again, I wasn't very good, but I was a hard worker. And the coach, I guess he saw something in me from the very beginning, because he was always like, you do what you're told, and you work very hard, so you will be successful. So I kept going back. So my very first year, I didn't make the team per se to run. I was on a team. I went to Boys and Girls Championships, but I didn't participate. I was one of the younger ones in prep school, because in high school, because the average age entering high school is usually around 11 and 12, and I was 10 years old entering high school. So I was one of the younger ones. I didn't make the team to compete the first year, but I went, and the experience was, I loved it, and I just kept going back.
So yeah, and that's well, I guess the bug bit you at that point. The athletics bug was kind of, did it bit you and hold on, or did you
I would say it did. It was fun. You leaving your house every Saturday, going to track meet, meeting new people, and I guess that was what I always look forward to.
Now, one of the things you just said, you entered high school at 10 years old, because we are in
Yes.
Jamaica, we're under the British school system. But we'll get to towards the end, in the middle, somewhere in this interview, we'll get to talk about your academic pursuits as well, because that's just as stellar. And I think our audience needs to understand when we talk about Danielle Williams and your sister Charmaine and others, it's really what we call the whole student athlete. Academics and athletics, which is also key. We had Mr. Bancroft Gordon on our show, and he was talking about the woe that he feels, the fact that some are not matriculating in the classroom as well as on the track. But we'll get to that in a minute. But so in high school, you go all the way through the ranks of classes, class 3, 2, class 1, the whole nine yards.
Yes, I did. No, I didn't go to class one actually, because well, I didn't age out, but I was finished with my high school years, and so I had no need to go to class one, so I stopped at class two.
Wow. So wait,
So I was
let's.
about 15.
So wait a minute. So you finished all the way through grade 11? I mean, grade it would be 11, right? By class
Yes, that's
2?
no. Grade 11 would be fifth form, so I went
Right.
to sixth form
You went to
and did
sixth
2
form.
years in sixth form. Yes. and wow. I still didn't make it to class one.
That, but you know, that's, you're saying it so nonchalantly. That's actually pretty impressive. Are you just?
I guess I never really looked at it that way.
Wow, wow. So, how do you transition from high school to college? What was that like?
That part was pretty difficult. I mean, coming out of high school, I really did. I wouldn't say I had a lot of college offers. I probably had like three. There was Johnson C. Smith, there was Mississippi State, and there was UTEC, which is the college in Jamaica. And for all intents and purposes, I was leaning towards staying home because that's all you know. That's what you're comfortable with. All your friends, your family are in Jamaica, so that's where you want to stay. But I was approached about 2 years prior by Lennox Graham, who was the coach of Johnson C. Smith. And that was before I considered myself to be good or anything. And I had knew him prior to, because he coached my sister when she went to Alpha. He was a coach of Timpson College, and he coached her. So I've been knowing him for quite some time. And he approached me, and he's like, you know, I want you to come to my school. And so that was the first time I really ever gave it thought to take up a scholarship to go overseas to attend university. And so I really struggled with that decision. And I think it was my father who actually made the decision for me, because he was pretty adamant that, you know, you're going to get a college education and you don't want to do it in Jamaica, because I think the collegiate athletic system in Jamaica is more geared towards the professional side. And so he was like, no, I don't want you to do that. You're going to go overseas to get a college education. And after you're done, you can think about professionalism. And that's just where it was. And so I took up a scholarship, came to Johnson C. Smith, and really had no idea what to expect in the first year ever set foot outside of the norm, what you've known, what you've grown accustomed to. And so it was different, trying to get used to a new way of life, a new system, a new everything. But thankfully, my sister was also there. And there were quite a few Jamaicans there as well who made me feel comfortable in that home. And so I adjusted well, and with a Jamaican coach as well, made a world of difference.
So wait a minute, let me get this straight. Your sister, Charmaine, mm-hmm. was already at Johnson C. Smith. That was not enough. And Leiford Green was there. That wasn't enough to say, oh, I'm going there.
That was not enough for me, no.
Wow. So you get to Johnson C. Smith, and I guess at this point, the rest is history. Working with Coach Graham, I understand. I happened mm-hmm. to be at Johnson C. Smith when both Charmaine and Leiford came, or even when Coach Graham came. And to see you come and just fit right in. So you're saying you didn't feel comfortable or that you fit in. So the question I would have, and others would want to know, is then what was the impetus? Because you literally almost like took off in terms of your athletic performance. Can you walk us through what that was like at Johnson C. Smith?
I don't know that I immediately took off. I think it took me a few years. I mean, my first year there, it was kind of like getting settled and getting into the way of things. So I didn't immediately take off. I think I had like a backseat to Leiford and Charmaine. They were in their final years, and so they were the quote-unquote stars of the program. They were carrying the torch and leading us, so I was kind of in the back, and once they departed, then I kind of stepped forward and started, you know, following the examples that they set, the lead, and trying to do things the same way that they did. So I think my second to third year was really when I started elevating. My first year was kind of just there.
Right, right. So what was the experience like at Johnson C. Smith in terms of being away from Jamaica, being away from home? You had a small community in the Jamaicans that mm-hmm. were there at Johnson C. Smith. But for the young folks, probably back in Jamaica, who are thinking, should I go overseas or should I stay? What advice would you give them?
Oh, I would absolutely 100% tell them to go. I think living in a brand new country away from all that you've ever known, it builds character. There was something in you that you would never have experienced before unless you tried. And so I would absolutely encourage anybody to, if you want to do something, go live in a foreign country, expose yourself to a different culture, a different way of life. Take a step outside of all that you've ever known, because I promise you, you will unlock so much about yourself that you would never known if you had stayed put, stayed home. I have learned so much about myself in the 4 years that I went to Johnson C. Smith. I didn't know how to cook. Now, in the 4 years, I learned how to cook. I learned how to be independent, basically.
So you learned, basically, at Johnson C. Smith, you kind of grew up.
Yes.
But if based on what you know and the pull of students to focus solely on athletics and not have the mix between athletics and academics, how do we as adults, especially myself in higher education in general, how do we get young, talented athletes to see both sides? If you could give us some advice as adults on the that are further along, some advice that also folks that are following you can understand in what I guess is plain English, what would that advice be?
It starts from a young age. I mean, my parents were pretty adamant on getting an education, so they drove that in me from as early as I ever known that, you know, education, education, education. So from a very young age, I was always implored that you have to succeed in the classroom. Before I even knew I was good at athletics, I had to be good in the classroom. So it starts from there. And in college, my coach, she was always education. You have to be a student first. So every adult in my life had always drilled the importance of education for me. And so it came as second nature.
And that carried all the way through college, because academically,
all the way through college,
you performed exceptionally well in college as well. And both you and your sister, so guess your family, that was just an expectation from your family that, you know, to be a student athlete is student first, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, and I don't think, like, none of my parents, my siblings, we didn't have the goals of, okay, we're going to do track and we're going to do sports and we're going to do it past the realm of, you know, an extracurricular activities. We didn't have the mindset that, you know, this is the vehicle that's going to take us to new realms and new experiences. So for us, it was always just education. So sports just happened to be something that we turned out to be good at.
That is awesome. So you go through your college experience at Johnson C. Smith. You had a wonderful experience. I know it's a great school. I worked there, so I know the experience that you had. And it was great spending time with you guys. I will tell you, sometimes I used to walk down to the track and I see the programs that Coach Graham puts out. And I used to feel really pained for all of you watching you guys go through those programs. But look at where it has taken you to. So I think the next question that I would have then is Johnson C. Smith, you had this wonderful experience. You worked with Lennox Graham, who is a Olympic coach and national coach in Jamaica. What was the athletic aspect of that in terms of your relationship with coach and your maturation in the sport? Because you've set many records. Just recently, I read somewhere that the NC2A just bestowed upon you, is it Athlete of the Decade or something like that? I can't recall what the title was.
I know they inducted me into the Hall of Fame.
Right, you were inducted into... So
you're the Hall of Fame.
What I like about you is that you're so humble about it, but can you tell us about your successes? That might be somewhat a little bit... uncomfortable for you, but I think the audience needs to hear a little bit about what you accomplished at Johnson C. Smith at the NCAA level and the CIAA level, because you're national champion. I think in 1 year you scored a tremendous amount of points, and I think the team overall was like, I don't know if you were there when they were like second place or something like that. So can you explain to us exactly what you did? And I know you're humble at heart, But I think people need to understand the impact that you have athletically while still performing academically in the classroom.
Well, I'm the type of person, once I've accomplished something, I kind of put it out my mind. So asking me to recount them is probably going to be difficult because I really don't remember. And it's so long ago, too. But, at Johnson C. Smith, my freshman year, I was pretty okay. I made it to the NCAA. I placed indoors for the first year ever competing indoors. I competed in the 60-meter hurdles. And I think I finished around sixth place. So, again, you know, I was just a competitor. Outdoors, though, I went in the hurdles and the 100 meter, and I got second place in both of them, those events. So at that point in time, I was like, okay, and I was a freshman, so I was the youngest in the field. I was like, okay, this is not actually too bad. But my sophomore year, I actually was injured for the entire, that was 2012, so I was injured for the entire indoor and outdoor seasons. And I think that kind of shifted something within me because I've never been injured before that point in time. And so I was always competing, always able to compete. And so not being able to do what you want to do, what you've always taken for granted, because I could always do it. I think that was the kind of the change that I needed to say, okay, this is what I want to do. And so I have to do everything in my power to be able to do it. And so coming off of the injury in 2012, my sophomore year into my junior year, it was a brand new person on the track, because my junior year is the year that I really stepped forward and that almost every record that I think still stands at this point in time. I went to indoors, I won the 60 hurdles indoor and placed second in the 200. And then I won outdoors and I won the 100, I won the 200 and I came second in the hurdles. And that was the first time I ran 11.2. That was my first time under 23 seconds. I ran 22.6, which is the NCAA Division II record. And our relay team, we ran the NCAA 4x1 record. And so that was the year that I really stepped forward and started believing that, okay, maybe I have the talent to move forward into the next level. Coming off of that, I went down to the Jamaica National Trials, and I went and I won the National Trials to go to the World Championships in Moscow. And I was 19 years old, just running for fun, went down, beat all these professional athletes. And so at that point in time, to make my first World Championship team, at that point in time, it still hadn't really set in that, you know, maybe I have what it takes to be a world-class athlete, but I started to buy into it. I listened to Coach Graham telling me that, you know, I really have what it takes to do great things at the next level. And so that was really the start of everything at that moment in time from Johnson C. Smith. And, you know, I was actually speaking to Coach Graham this weekend, and we were talking about that. We didn't necessarily have the best facility coming out of Johnson C. Smith, or the equipment and everything, and going through all that, you know, the struggles, as we call it, was really what set it in me to really accomplish everything and to really appreciate everything that I have now.
Wow. So that is impressive. I just sat here listening with a grin on my face because I remembered it, but to hear you replay it and you know, recount all that happened, the entire Johnson C. Smith community and the alums and all across the nation were so proud of all that you were achieving. It was for some of us, it was mind-blowing to watch it. And, you know, I know that the alums and others of that prestigious institution really appreciated what you, and quite honestly, what your sister and Mr. Green did with the rebirth of track and field at that institution. So you go through Johnson C. Smith. You have this success at the NCAA level. You have several records that still stand, CIAA, mm-hmm. NCAA. So you make the leap to be a professional athlete. What was that like in making that transition?
It was different. Making the transition in college, you have a team. Track and field is an individual event, but you still have a team that you go and you practice with and you travel with. And so now, as a professional, you're practicing pretty much by yourself. You're traveling by yourself. You're learning new things. You're traveling internationally. I mean, the first time I traveled across Europe, I traveled by myself, and it was strange. I know my mother worried the entire time. By the time I got Wi-Fi, I had like 100 text messages from her. So it was weird, but at the same time, like I said, college, it forced me to grow up. And so I was able to manage myself well enough. I consider myself to be a very smart, intelligent person. And so I did not have much difficulty traveling the world by myself, but it was different because coming out of a system where, you know, you're going everywhere with a team, with your coach. And so I remember the first time I was going to a track meet, and I was like, but coach, you're not coming? He was like, no. I'm like, but you're the coach. And he was like, well, you're going to have to figure it out on your own. I'm like, well. So I had to literally figure out everything on my own as I go. And so I used all those along the way to really help me in the sport and in life, figuring things out on my own as I go. And track and field has definitely helped in that aspect.
So now you know, not everybody in the world, you have achieved something that not many people have achieved, is that you were world champion. So from the time you became world champion and you joining the professional ranks, the time between those two bookends, what was that like in terms of not only the traveling on your own and the growing up, but what was that journey like to say, okay, here is my goal? Did you have a path that you follow or a goal that you set to say, look, I'm going to be world champion, I'm going to be an Olympic champion? Did you lay it out like that, or did it kind of meander?
I definitely did not. It kind of just happened. I tell everybody, my goal was not to be a professional athlete. I had that not in the plans at all. I knew I wanted to work in sports. I love sports, but I knew I wanted to work in sports. But being a professional athlete, that was just something I happened upon. I just happened to be good enough to get a contract, happened to be a professional athlete. So, no, it was not in the plans. I didn't scribble down world champion my first year. It came as a surprise to me my first year. The very first year I was a professional athlete, I became a world champ. And I tell people it probably happened a bit too fast. But my very, very first year, 2015, as a professional athlete, I became a world champion. I did not plan it. It came as a surprise to me. I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, just enjoying competing against the people I see on my TV all the time. I was confident, but at the same time, it's like, I have nothing to lose. I mean, the faster the person I compete against, the faster I'm going to run. And my thing was, I just wanted to run fast. The faster I could go, the better for me. And so going into the World Championship, I was not the favorite. I didn't consider myself to be a favorite. I didn't even know that I could win. I didn't have it in my plans. My only goal was to make it to the finals. That was the only thing I had in my mind. And when I got to the final, I remember saying, all right, this is it. This one last good run, whatever happens, happens. I tell everybody, if I had finished last in that race with the same time that I ran to win, I would have been content, because my goal was to make it to the finals and to run a personal best. And I did that. But then I went to the finals and I won. I was like, how did you all let me win? Like, I was not supposed to win. You had the defending champion in the race. You had the world leader in the race. Everybody that was there that was supposed to win didn't win. I was the person that was not supposed to win, not even supposed to medal, and I won. And so it was kind of shocked. To this day, I still don't know how it happened. But when it's your time, it's your time, and there's nothing that anybody could do. Coach always says the race belongs to the person who is the best on the day, and that day that was me. And so walked away from that world championship, shocked, surprised, but happy that I came out with a gold medal, my personal best.
Wow. So you said something very interesting before you shared that story. You said it came too fast. What did you mean by that?
Because I think that you, when you weren't prepared for something to happen, because I wasn't prepared to win, and so I didn't know how I won. I was still young to the sport, to the hurt. I didn't understand everything that I know now. I didn't know then. And so when you win, it's kind of like, okay, you won, so you're supposed to keep winning. Or that was the mindset that I had the following season. But then I didn't know how I went, how I won. So I kept trying to replicate something that I didn't know how I did. And so it kind of started messing with everything, your mindset. But you won here, so you can win. You beat them all before, so you can beat them. But you're not beating them. Why? And so when I say it happened too fast, I mean, you know, I wasn't prepared for it, and I didn't know how to handle it moving forward.
Oh, wow. Wow. See, that was something that most of us that watch you on TV run, we would have never thought that, because you're just fast and you're good at what you do. Going over those hurdles, you're just like gliding over the hurdles. Just like, wow, she is in the zone. She belongs. But you, as the athlete experiencing it now, you're trying to figure out how you did it. So how is that, since you were a world champion, how has your life changed?
I don't think it has changed. I really don't think it's changed. I mean, I have the same friends I did when I was 10. I mean, probably now I have a little bit more money, can live comfortably, you know, travel here or there if I want to. But for the most part, yeah, it's pretty simple. I go to practice, I come home, I watch TV, I don't do anything more than that, and then my life is pretty boring.
So you're still working with Coach Graham. How's it working with Coach Graham? You know, he is known around the world now because of all the athletes. You know, he won boys champs 6 times in a row, and he came to Johnson C. Smith. Dr. Yancey hired him to Johnson C. Smith, and he took that track program from where it was to where it ended up before he departed and going to Clemson. So he's a household mm-hmm. name in Jamaica and around the world. What is it like working with him and being one of his athletes that he's guiding and leading at this time?
It's pretty great. He is one of those coaches that's not just a coach. He's a mentor. He's a father figure. And so he, in addition to coaching, he's a life coach. He helps you with anything in life that you need. He's always like, you know, call me if you need anything. If it's 3 a.m. in the morning, call me. If I can answer, I'll answer, and I'll be there for you. So he's just more than a coach. He always has a challenge for me, and that's why I like him. There's always something that he thinks that I can improve upon. I'm never going to be the perfect hurdler in his eyes. If I find something and we fix it in the next season, there's something else that we're going to work on to be better. And so I couldn't imagine anybody else coaching me. If he can't coach me, I'd probably retire at this moment in time.
Really?
So, yes.
Wow.
That's just how I view him and the respect that I have for him. You know, we do butt heads at times. I think he's probably the only person who could deal with me as an athlete anyways. So, but, yeah, as far as coaching goes, I don't think there's anybody in the world that's a better coach than Lennox Graham.
Wow. So, well, given all that you have said, you know, you're a world champion, and you just shared with us some of your thoughts around being the world champion so early.
Yeah.
What would be the highest high, using bad English here, highest high that you had in the sport, and what was the lowest low, just to continue with the bad English, lowest low you've had in the sport? Or what is your biggest achievement in your mind, and what is your biggest disappointment thus far?
Well, I could immediately point to my biggest disappointment, and that was 2016 and not making the Jamaican Olympic team. And the reason why it was my biggest disappointment, because that was coming off the heels of winning world championships in 2015. And so you're like, okay, you won world championships in 2015. The next step is to the Olympic Games. And so, again, that was coming off of winning too early and trying to replicate things that I didn't know how I did. And so 2016 came along and I was second-guessing everything, overthinking everything. You know, I should be here right now and I'm not here right now based on last season. And so going into the National the Olympic Trials, I just wasn't running and having fun as how I should have. And I was way too into my head and thinking things through and just, and so I went and instead of focusing on executing my race and what I should do, I was focusing on my competitors. And so I got into the race and leading the race around hurdle 5 for hurdle 6, I crashed into a barrier and I fell, and that was the end of the Olympic dream. And so that was definitely the lowest part of my career to date. And the highest part, I have two, and both of them happened last year, breaking the national record and winning the Diamond League finals. And the reason why those are my two highest is because the national record was something that I've been chasing since I became a professional. I always thought, okay, I could get the national record. And so since 2015, 2016, I've been chasing the national record, and I finally, it was 12:45 before, and then a collegiate athlete, Jenny Brown, she broke it last year, 12:40, and so I was able to break it again last year and ran 12:32, so that's the national record now, and as well as winning the Diamond League final, because that was something that a goal that I set out to achieve at the beginning of last season, and I was able to accomplish that. So those are my two highs and my lows.
Well, you know, it's funny, people, whenever the athletes that I know, because of me knowing Coach Graham and the athletes that he has coached, and those of you that I've met and known and watched because of Johnson C. Smith or whatever, I take things that happen to you guys very personally. So when you were burning up the track with the Diamond League and running those times and going through, it was coming off of a disappointing season anyhow. Were you trying to prove a point, or were you just saying, look, I want to show people that I am Daniel Williams and I belong? Was that your mentality, or was there something else?
None of the above. It was just the fact that I had a job to do. My job is to run, and so I went out there and did my job. It just so happened that it came on the heels of all that drama and controversy that happened in Kingston, but I personally don't think the two are related. The goal for me at the beginning of the year was always to do what I accomplished that year. And so those things that happened were just an unnecessary distraction that I tried my hardest not to let affect me negatively. I guess I could say I turned it into fuel, but I just wasn't focused on it at all. Whatever happened, I kind of just blocked it out and just tried to move on as best as I could.
And that you did. That you did. So you had your opening race yesterday. I'm still sad that I missed it. But what is next for you on the track, and what are some of the goals and things that you've set for yourself that you are, you know, comfortable sharing?
Oh, well, my goals are all targeted towards next season. I've pretty much written off this season based on everything that was happening. And so right now it's just a matter of keeping in fit, keeping in shape, keeping fit, you know, just been turning all my focus to next year, which should be the Olympic Games. And so my focus is to medal at the Olympic Games, one. Two, to be a consistent 12:3 hurdler and to run another personal best. I always want to run a personal best every time I step on the track. So run another personal best, to win the Diamond League final yet again, to be number one in the world in the 100 meter hurdles. Those are my goals for next season. And those will always be my goal every single time. It's always to medal, always to set a personal best, always to be in the top three in the world in my events.
Well, you can't beat that goal. That's very interesting because for someone who started out not thinking about being a professional athlete, now to hear the goals that you're setting, that's rather impressive. Those of us that have never had the opportunity to do these things will probably say, wow, that is quite a leap. So I want to go back to one thing, and you guys know me now. You know me as Mr. Hector, and you know the administrator and college administrator and so on and so forth. But you performed exceptionally well in the classroom as well. So what is after the professional career is over, how do you now pivot? And the degrees that you got, is that something that's still in the back of your mind to be utilized, or are you looking at something totally different once this professional career is over?
I mean, definitely. Many people don't know, and that's because my life is pretty much a private. I keep my life as private as possible. But I've completed my master's degree last September. I did my master's in sports industry management from Georgetown University. And so I finished that last year. And so after track and field, my goal is to work in sports. I want to work in sports. I don't want to be a coach. That's all. I don't want to be a coach and I don't want to be an agent, but I want to work in preferably professional, collegiate or professional sports, but preferably professional. And I like the event production side of things, so I want to work in event productions. And so that is my goal. Hopefully, there's some doors that could open after I finish professional track and field, but that is my aim, to work in sports.
So it's safe to say then, you are prepared from the time you left Jamaica, you have been preparing for everything for the rest of your life. It's like what my coach, who I wrote my book on, that is really responsible for this podcast, when we got to Howard, he said to us, sacrifice 4 years of your life for the rest of your life. Is that something you would agree with in terms of sharing with young people?
Oh, definitely. 4 years is, you'd think it's a long time, but it really goes by so fast. And so I would say when you take on that 4 years in college, to try and learn as much about not only yourself as possible, but the people around you, form relationships with people who you can count on and they can count on you, because you're going to need those people. We can't go through life by ourselves. It's very impossible to do. And each of us needs someone. And so for the 4 years that I went to university, I can't say that I was the best at forming relationships, but there are a handful of people that I know that I can count on and call on for advice or for help if I need it. And we all need those people in life. And so going forward, and, you know, as I grow up and I move forward, I try to be that person for collegiate athletes who are coming up, especially the ones from Jamaica who come up and who don't necessarily have that support system. I try to be that person. So we all need those people in our life. It's imperative for our growth and development. And yeah, like what she said.
Like what she's okay. Now I'm going to ask you this question. You're a world champion and you're from Jamaica. Jamaica track and field is woven into the very DNA of Jamaica, and you're a world champion. And you know, we have other female world champions, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. You have Elaine Thompson, et cetera, et cetera. Now there are young girls that are in Jamaica that look up to you all and say, I want to be like Danielle Williams. I had a guest on my podcast, Camille Elaine, who is a NASA scientist, rocket scientist, who spends a lot of her time giving back to young girls and trying to get them to understand that they are the purveyors of their own destiny. So in your sense of now being, like it or not, you are a role model. How do you engage the young folks in Jamaica whenever you go home to Jamaica to say, stay the course? What type of advice and counsel would you give, especially young girls as they see you and others and the successes that you've had? How do you inspire and encourage them to, you know, basically follow in your footsteps?
Well, I try to impart knowledge in them. I try to tell them that, you know, I've done it before and I'm trying to give you all the blueprint, but at the same time, I understand that you have to do it yourselves and make your own mistakes and figure it out for yourself. But I tell them that at the end of the day, nothing happens by accident. I mean, I might think that, you know, I didn't have it in my plan, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't always in the plans for me. I just didn't realize it then. And none of this would have been possible without two things, my determination and my discipline, because I'm very disciplined. And I think that whatever I had done, whether if it was not track and field, I would have still had success in it because I'm very determined and I'm very disciplined. I don't allow anything to let me deviate from the goals that I set out to accomplish for myself. And so I tell them the same thing. Set your goals and be disciplined and work hard towards it, because that's the only way you'd see success. Whatever it is that you want to accomplish, you have to have the discipline to work for it. Because if you're not disciplined, then it's unlikely that you will have the success that you want to have.
You know, something is funny you say that about discipline. I recently moved my home. So while going through some boxes, I found a videotape in 1996 when the NCAA rules changed to the clearinghouse and so on. I took Coach Moultrie, the coach that I wrote this book about, and that's really behind this podcast, as I said before. I thought I had lost the tape. We went down to Jamaica and we split the nation in half. We were at Shortwood Teachers College and Sam Sharp Teachers College trying to say, hey, look, this change is coming. I thought I had lost the tape. CVM came out and interviewed Coach Moultrie and myself, and they had given me a tape. I thought I lost the tape. So for 7 years now, I couldn't find the tape. So I'm packing out a box. I find the tape. And as I find the tape, I found a clipping about what the rules were. And as I fast forward and I think about some of the challenges that our young people are having still navigating the NCAA rules and so on and so forth, regardless if they want to stay home in Jamaica or come to the US. But in your mind, if we have so much talent that is coming up through prep school, primary school, all age school, why are we not seeing more athletes sustain that level of competitiveness so that more can become professionals and more can, in some ways, lift their circumstances? What is the barrier that stops that?
The barrier that stops the matriculation to the next level. Some of it, or probably most of it, will definitely have to be with discipline, I'd say. I mean, a lot of them, well, they've pretty much, if they've been succeeding from a young age, they're used to having things go their way. They're used to winning. They're used to being at the top of their game. And then they find that when they move to the next level, then it's not as easy as it was. And so they probably lose interest, or they lose the discipline. Or they didn't have the discipline in the first place, but it just came so easy to them that they find that they have to work even hard now at the next level, and they just can't apply themselves to reap that success. And some of them, it just isn't for them. Sometimes sports comes pretty easy to you at a younger age, and then as you grow and you mature, you find that it's getting harder and harder. And so others, they feel that, you know, it's time to gracefully bow out of the sport. So there's not one thing that I think that is causing the divide. It could be a range of things, but for the most part, I think some of them just lack discipline and lack motivation as they grow older.
Well, you know, for someone so young, you're awfully wise. Has anyone ever said that to you?
Yes.
I know I used to tease you guys about that because you guys had this steely resolve that you guys were getting through those programs. So Danielle, we have about 10 minutes left in this discussion. Is there And I ask this of some of my guests, and some will say, well, you know, I'm not an inspirational person. I'm just someone who now has wisdom because of what I've experienced. But if I was to ask you, what are words of inspiration that you could share with us for people who want to do something that's bigger than themselves? Because you have accomplished that. I know you are rather humble and laid back, but you have done something that is rather massive. What words of inspiration and encouragement would you share? And as you think about it and respond, it's really about the calls I get and the feedback I get about this podcast, believe it or not, runs two bookends. It's either from folks that are older or wiser that is saying thank you, or there's from young people who are also saying thank you, but it's for different reasons. So if there's any words of inspiration that you would share, what would that be? I'm putting you on the spot.
You know, I read a book the other day, and it was called, I think it was Think Like a Warrior or something like that. And I had like 5 takeaways from the book that I think that I could use. So my motto for my life is, do unto others as you would want to do unto you. That's the motto that I go through in life. And so I always try to think of others before I do anything. I'm like, if this happened, if someone did this to me, how would I feel? And so I live by those words. But if I could leave any words of inspiration, I would say for anybody who's, you know, trying to find success in life, I would say, focus on only the things that you have control over, which are your efforts and your attitudes. Because once you realize that you can only control the effort that you bring towards tasks and your attitudes and how you respond to setbacks and successes, then you notice that everything else that you have no control over, it's a waste of time, it's a waste of energy, and it's not going to bring you closer to anything that you want to achieve. So any words of inspiration I could leave is just to focus on the things that you have control over, and that's your effort and your attitude. And that's one of the things that I took away from the book that I read recently.
And that is actually wise words. I told you just now, you're a very wise person. But as we get ready to close, you just said something that struck me. You are coached by Lennox Graham, who is a deeply spiritual and faith-filled individual, and you just mentioned, "Do unto others as have to do unto me." Is your faith part of your grounding and your discipline? Is there a higher calling that you turn to?
Yes, I do. You know, I don't consider myself like a deeply religious or spiritual person, but I do enter to a higher being and believe that he governs everything. Every success that I have, every failure that I've been through, every single thing that has happened in my life is a result of the Lord's anointing and ordained on my life. And so while, like I said earlier, while it was not necessarily what I thought I would be doing in life, it was always on the plans. I just took a while to realize it. And so I God has the overall say for my life, and I look to him for strength and wisdom. Before I go on to compete, I say a prayer when I'm on the track, getting on my marks. I say, you know, do all things through Christ. Where I win, I lose, I fall, it is his plan, and let his will be done. And so I just let him take the wheels.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Well, you do know that we are going to have Coach Graham on the show. And he is a close friend. And as we work through, you know, Kingston College aside and the Fortis family, it's his time at Johnson C. Smith where we watched him build a program. And I just want to say to you before we end this call or this podcast that you are an inspiration to a number of people, both older, younger, and in between, because you have exhibited character and you have exhibited things that people need to see, perseverance, and quite honestly, something that's missing in our world today, humility, the ability to be humble, even though you're successful. And I want to say to you that I am humbled that you took some time to spend with little old Mr. Hector, as you guys call me, as I try to inspire young people to understand that they can achieve more than what the station in life they have inherited. So I wanted, before we close, I wanted you to hear that directly from me, because at the end of the day, this thing that we live called life is solely not for us, but is how we can impact others and leave a vibration in the earth. So I will give you, I give you the last word. Is there anything that you want to share with the 2 minutes we have left that we have not covered, or is there something on your heart that you'd like to share with not only this audience, but more specifically, the track and field community, fraternity, and maybe even folks back home in Jamaica? Is there anything that you'd like to share to close us out?
Oh, I think just jumping off what you just said right now, you know, we're here to inspire others and to leave an impact. I think that the greatest thing that I could achieve on this earth, on this planet, is knowing that I impacted and imparted positivity and impacted others' life positively through my presence. I hope that I can be a blessing to others, if not in words, but in actions, and that is my sole purpose on this earth.
Well, Daniel, well said, well said. So we've come at time, and I want to reiterate my thanks for you coming on the show and being with us as we continue on this journey with this podcast. And just want to let you know that we appreciate all that you have done. And we will be watching. And based on what we have seen you do and the things that I know that you have accomplished in the way you are, the sky is the limit. And I'll be sitting back watching. You know, my wife and I always cheer whenever you run. And we'll continue to do so because we know that you're not only running, but you're also inspiring as you run. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest this week has been Miss Danielle Williams, a Jamaican world champion at 110 meter hurdles, but not only that, a solid human being. Danielle, thank you so much for joining me. And this is It's Easy Son, life lessons on your journey to your purpose. We'll see you next week.